This week on Art of the Air, we feature the owner of Silver Moon Chicago, designer Liz Meyer, who has spent her career dressing and designing for the rock and roll elite. Next, we interview the new executive director for Miller Beach Arts and Creative District, Jennifer Akamura. Our spotlight is on South Shore Symphony with maestro Troy Wabdell about their Holiday Pops concert on December 17th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight. They have their Holiday Pops concert, the South Shore Orchestra, and they're going to be returning to the Memorial Opera House stage for their holiday celebration. Concert the whole family can enjoy. They have traditional and contemporary music of the holiday season, some things from movies, and also a Christmas sing-along. You can still get your tickets at memorialoperahouse.com. But we are pleased to have the conductor of the South Shore Orchestra and actually the founder, Maestro Troy Wabdell. Welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Aloha, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Troy, we'd like you to talk to our audience a little bit about your concert. I hit on some of the things, but I think you can go into some of the details about what you're going to feature and everything on December 17th. So tell us a little bit about that, and we'll even talk a little bit about the orchestra.
Great. This concert is very well received in Porter County and Valparaiso. It usually sells out, and it features classical Christmas music, holiday music, traditional holiday music, world music we're going to be featuring a lot of, plus a special musical tribute to the Greek composer Mikis Theodorakis, who just passed away in September.
Troy, do you select the pieces for that tribute? Because his body of work is so tremendous. How do you go about selecting what you're going to feature?
Well, I do all of the programming, yes. As far as Mikis Theodorakis, I had the chance to visit him in Athens in 2019 and was kind of planning to do more of his music here. And then, of course, the pandemic hit and things kind of went awry. But some of the pieces that we're going to be doing, music from Zorba the Greek, which is probably his most famous piece. And then there's also the Mikis Theodorakis Overture that we're going to do the American premiere of, actually, at the Holiday Pops. And that is arranged by Yannis Belonis, who is a pianist in Greece. And it's an arrangement, kind of a medley of all of Theodorakis' most famous pieces.
Mm. That should be really lovely.
So what's some of the more recognizable things that we can hear on the program?
Oh, all of the carols, such as Rudolph, Santa's Coming to Town. There'll be some Leroy Anderson Christmas Festival, Sleigh Ride. What else? Silent Night, A Visit from Santa. Santa will be there as well, and he will be narrating The Night Before Christmas with the orchestra.
Wow.
How many members are there in the orchestra?
We usually have At maximum, maybe 60, 70 people in the orchestra. However, it depends on the repertoire. And also for this concert, we're pulling the numbers back a little bit so we can be distanced on stage because of COVID protocols and all those things.
What about the house then too? Are there protocols for the audience?
The Opera House has their own protocols, which goes with Porter County. So whatever the Porter County guidelines are for COVID, that's what the Opera House does.
Beautiful venue.
Yes, very beautiful. We love it there.
Is the Opera House kind of your base of operation, or have you performed other venues?
We have performed in many other venues, but since maybe 5 years ago, we partnered with them, and now we're the orchestra in residence at the Opera House. But we've performed many places. Ivy Tech in Valparaiso was our home before the Opera House, but we've also done concerts, you know, throughout northern Indiana, basically.
Right. And you're based in Fort Wayne, but what was the motivation to create an orchestra here in Northwest Indiana?
Well, there was a need for it, actually. This is kind of stems from a long, long, long time ago when Valparaiso University used to have a community-based orchestra. And then at some point they decided they wanted it to be student-based only. So there were a lot of community players that had nowhere to play. So that was really the inkling of creating this ensemble, South Shore Orchestra. And now it's become more of a professional orchestra with accomplished community members in it, as well as student apprentices.
And now you have people that are in other orchestras. I know I've seen a couple at the LaPorte County Symphony and Crossover, which is actually very good for an orchestra. But you have some notable members that are in your orchestra?
Yes, we share musicians from, as you said, LaPorte Symphony, Northwest Indiana Symphony, some symphonies in Michigan. Some will come down to play with us.
South Bend.
Yes, and even from Fort Wayne. As far as Fort Wayne, we've had people come to play with us.
Very good. Tell us just a little briefly about yourself, what you do outside of doing the South Shore Orchestra.
I am a full-time conductor, orchestra conductor. So I do South Shore Orchestra in Valparaiso, and I also am a conductor with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic, a resident staff conductor, and I also conduct the youth orchestras with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic. And then I also do a lot of work with world music and some of the area organizations with world music.
Very good. Well, we just have about a minute left, so tell us everything about how they can get tickets, where it's going to be at, the date, time, and all that, Troy.
Yes, South Shore Orchestra Holiday Pops, December 17th. It's a Friday, and I believe it starts at 7 p.m. Tickets available at memorialoperahouse.com. And they're going fast. I checked the other day, so they're getting close to selling out. So if you don't want to be left in the cold, get your tickets.
Literally.
And you can find out information about the orchestra at what website?
SouthShoreOrchestra.org.
Very good. And Memorial Opera House is, of course, memorialoperahouse.com. And you can find out ticket information there. They also have their phone number there. Maestro Troy Wabdell, who of the South Shore Orchestra, is going to be returning to the Memorial Opera House stage for the holiday celebration December 17th at 7:30. Get your tickets if you want to see them. Thank you so much for sharing that on Art of the Air Spotlight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, she's the owner and designer of Silver Moon Chicago. She spent last 18 or more years dressing and designing for the rock and roll elite, and has brought her professional experience for a great eye for design to the Silver Moon for the past 10 years. She's inspired by her travels. You'll find Silver Moon to be stocked with premium inventory from across the globe. We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air, Liz Meyer. Welcome to Art on the Air.
The fabulous Hi. Liz Meyer.
Oh, thanks so much. How are you?
Well, Liz, we always like to start off for our audience talking about your origin story, kind of like everything there is known about Liz, but you're afraid to ask. So tell us about how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. So I think I just like very far back, I think I always had a really supported family, and they always kind of just let me do what I wanted to do and follow my own path. And even as a small child, I always loved fashion and dressing up, and I was a figure skater back in the day. So kind of started my whole design process, designing costumes with my mom, and my mom is a very fashionable woman. And so we kind of started when I was a child, and then fast forward to college and design school. I was in New York studying fashion at FIT. And when I left the Fashion Institute, I came back to Chicago, and I had the opportunity to work with some people in the music industry. And I kind of started my path in rock and roll. And I started 25 years ago in the music industry, and started with Aerosmith about 20, I was in my 20s, and I had the opportunity to style and design for Steven and the rest of the band, and worked for him for about 10 years, which was really exciting.
So was it clothing and accessories, like his rings and everything like that?
I always
his microphone.
To say,
did you decorate his mic?
Did
you
I did.
Style his microphone?
I did. My scarves are in the Hard Rock Hotel, actually, in Las Vegas. We had to do like a little mock-up in the glass cases. So I've got one of my whole outfits there with his scarves. So I worked for him for many years. I like to call it being more of a wardrobe artist. My journeys with all the musicians has always been everything from designing pieces to hair and makeup to just kind of personally working with them. And so that was fantastic. And then on that tour, I met the love of my life and my husband, who was an audio engineer, who now we're in business with Silver Moon. But that's where I met my husband, which was amazing. And then, fast forward into my 30s, I had the opportunity again to work with Paul McCartney, which was a wonderful opportunity. And I always feel like when these opportunities present themselves, you always jump at the chance.
Yeah, so talk about polar opposites from Steven Tyler to Paul McCartney.
Completely and totally polar opposites. Both phenomenal musicians.
Oh, phenomenal.
I just feel absolutely blessed and honored that I had the opportunity to work with all the people that I've had the chance to work with, including all just the talented teams behind the scenes. I've worked with Paul for about 10 years as well, designing and getting him ready, and again, hair and makeup. So even like all the little accessories and everything, but Paul doesn't need quite as much direction and kind of wrangling as Steven did, but so we had a great time together working. And up until a couple of years ago, when everything kind of shut down, we were still touring and everything in between being at the store and designing and kind of expanding the business here at Silver Moon.
So did you get to see the world via Aerosmith and Paul McCartney?
I did. And I feel so very fortunate at even at such a young age just to travel the world and just be inspired by just everything. I also worked for Ricky Martin, which was one of my first very large tour where it was a world tour. So I've went absolutely everywhere with one of my best friends, and we just had, you know, the best time together.
So Liz, you know, you, and I have to say, Liz, you have the most impeccable vision and style, and I'm always energized by any of our interactions. So as you're traveling the world, and Silver Moon is kind of not here yet, were you picking up wonderful vintage pieces of fabric or clothing? So how did you use your time as you went to all these different countries and places?
I was. And again, so lucky, because on all our days off, I would be going to antique markets and shopping and just, you know, sitting in parks and looking at people, you know, in their fashions from all different places. So, yeah, it's been great. And then I can go like hunting for amazing pieces of vintage, you know, all over the globe, which is so cool. And I did, anytime we're in Japan, it's my favorite place to visit. And just the fashion and the antiquing, it's just, it's amazing. And I've gotten a lot of people that I work with really excited about going antiquing and going to look for vintage. And so it kind of became a thing where, you know, two of us would go, and then by the end, you know, there's like 10 of us, you know, wanting to go out in search of really cool finds. Yeah.
Wonderful. And so when did Silver Moon enter your atmosphere?
So Silver Moon's actually been around since 1976. The original owner, Terry Kostin, friend, I would shop with her since high school, basically. We used to, her store used to be in Lakeview. I did restoration for her and worked for her actually in my early college years. And she was retiring and sold the business. And I bought Silver Moon, the whole inventory and the name, when I was on tour with Aerosmith, actually. So I was starting this new business and continued to be on the road. And so started then, so about 19 years ago, actually. And we started in Lakeview and then moved to Wicker Park. So we're now currently in our boutique in Wicker Park. And
which is glamorous. It's so glamorous.
Yeah. So we have a beautiful boutique. I always feel like the space and the shopping experience is as important as what's in the store. So we love to give people a really nice kind of dreamy experience when they come in the shop. And so we started originally just doing vintage, formal pieces and cocktail dresses, early though, from the 1900s, pieces from the 1900s through about the 1970s. And then when Andy and I got married, I just fell in love with all our vintage bridal and the idea of bridal gowns. And since then, we've just expanded our whole bridal collection. So now the store focuses more on bridal and bridal accessories and formal dresses.
So, yeah, but the big but is then you finally, and this is the part that I'm so excited about, is that you designed your own collection using your love of past eras to design a modern collection, but with a vintage feel. So
we did. Yeah. So that was really exciting. Actually, Andy and I launched our line about 5 years ago, and we started with our collection called Circa, which is a line of wraps and really beautiful faux fur pieces, wraps and toppers and beaded pieces that we do. And I'll always look and I'm really inspired by looking at old patterns and pieces and thinking about how to take them apart and rework them in a modern way. But just looking at all the details of vintage pieces. So we launched Circa and it's been really great. And we carry our line in the store as well as in about 40 boutiques across the United States. Also just started selling in Mexico City, which is really cool. And then kind of the natural progression was to have a line of gowns as well. So that's.
So what about the one and only collection?
So the one and only collection is something that I've always done since I've probably been in high school. This idea of taking vintage pieces and taking elements of them and reworking them into new pieces. So the one and only collection, we take all our beautiful inventory of textiles and trimmings from dresses from the 1900s through probably the 1970s. And then we recreate them in a very modern way and in the style of the gowns that we design. So everything is one of a kind and everything is, it's kind of our little art collection. Everything is numbered and signed and we just have this evolving and just changing collection of the one of a kind dresses as well.
So are you also still, because I know a long time ago you would offer the service of bringing in like grandma, great grandma's mothers down and to rework it for the current bride? Are you still doing that?
Yes, we are. So that's one of my favorite things to, and the team of seamstresses here, my favorite things to do is the heirloom redesign. So that's exactly what you get to do. It's a really unique service, and you can bring in your own heirloom dress. And then we have a really great consultation and talk about, you know, what you'd like to, the vision of the new bride will see their dress, and we completely recreate it. And it's a really, really special way of thinking about your wedding and your wedding dress. And, you know, your grandmother's worn it. A lot of times a mother has worn it, and then we design it for the new bride.
The question I have for you is, I'm looking at your website, and of course you have wedding dresses, but you have what's called vintage wedding dresses. And I know this is a radio show, so people can't exactly see them, but they can go to your website. But describe for our audience what's the difference between, like, say, a modern take on a wedding dress and those vintage dresses.
Yeah, so we do still carry our original vintage dresses. So these are dresses that we haven't touched. They're original to their era. Again, some of them date back to the 1900s. So there's a lot of vintage enthusiasts who like the real thing that hasn't been touched yet. And so we do have a beautiful collection of original vintage, which is where we started in the bridal industry. And so we continue to offer that to our customers.
And what else do you offer at Silver Moon? What's some of the other things? It's not just dresses.
Sure. So we have a beautiful selection of accessories. So you can also come in and set up a styling appointment, where even if you haven't, you know, purchased your gown from us, you can come in and work with one of us and try beautiful veils and combs and jewelry. And that is a combination of contemporary and vintage items. We have a beautiful selection of veils and
shoes.
We carry a line of shoes from the UK, Rachel Simpson, who has this very vintage inspired feel to all her pieces.
And so if somebody picks one of the gowns that you have designed, is it, you still are able to customize it even further if they want to embellish it in any other way?
Absolutely. We just kind of work with each girl. We rarely say no to an idea. So we always will push ourselves and try and give our brides exactly what they're looking for and offer our professional kind of advice and our eye for design, but we'll always try and make what their vision is come to life.
And looking at your website, I see that you have things in all price ranges. So this, you're not that unapproachable. I mean, there's so many things in here that are really quite reasonable and yet very stylish.
Sure. I like our space to be for everyone. We have some cocktail dresses and a little less formal pieces. You can get something for $500 and then our prices go up from there. So we just like it so that everybody can come in and find something or find some beautiful accessories to go with their dress.
Right. True. It's not just the bride that you can outfit. It's everyone else in the bridal party as well. Do you have any men's, do any menswear?
We don't do any men's for it anymore, no. But we are starting, we've had a lot of our brides who want to see, or after they kind of have bought something from us and have seen our process, they're like, oh, you know, they kind of get bummed that they won't have the opportunity to come see us again. So we decided, moving forward in the new year, we're going to be offering a lot of our collection in black. So we're going to be doing everything white and in black. So you can come shop with us after your wedding day, and we'll still have really neat pieces to offer.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So one thing we've been asking all of our guests is how COVID has impacted, well, obviously your business, but also yourself and your creativity. So yeah, why don't you speak to that? I mean, that's been almost over a year and a half here. So how's it impacted you?
Yeah. So we, you know, especially being in the bridal industry when all the weddings started to be canceled it was just a really emotional time because we had hundreds of brides that were just, you know, it was just this very upsetting time for everyone. And so we just wanted to make sure that everyone was taken care of and we moved forward for them. The brides got really creative and actually handled things pretty well given the situation. So we were closed for a while, which was absolutely devastating. Just not knowing what was going to happen and what was going to happen to your business, what was going to happen to you just personally, your health. But we tried to stay really positive for all our brides. And, you know, everybody got kind of creative. There was a lot of really amazing weddings that happened and people kind of shifted gears and maybe they had beautiful weddings in their parents' backyard. Maybe they, you know, did some like rooftop weddings for, you know, with friends. And so everything kind of shifted. And now, and then once things started opening up, you know, slowly we're getting back to normal. And I think 2022 is going to be a really busy, productive year for the industry. So, you know, it was really a stressful time for the store and just wondering, you know, if you were going to survive. But I feel like you kind of think more creatively and work harder and, you know, just try and come up with solutions. And then we also had, you know, on a personal note, you're trying to keep everybody upbeat and kind of deal with it all yourself. So, you know, for the store to be closed down for a while and music industry to be closed down, it was, you know, a pretty stressful time, but I feel positive everything's coming back and it's good to kind of move forward with everything.
So are any of the accessories your designs as well, or do you have vintage accessories?
So just our wrap collection is our own designs, but all our jewelry and hair pieces, that is a combination of contemporary designers other than myself and vintage. But we will take a lot of vintage jewelry and make really beautiful hair combs. You can also bring in an heirloom gown and we do beautiful accessories. In case you're not wearing the dress, we can do accessories for you. So we'll do veils, we'll take lace and beautiful embellishments off the dresses and add them to veils. We have a handbag collection, which is really special, where we kind of create these detailed bag covers almost that can be removed with your heirloom gown. So that's a really special piece that we offer.
And so what is the next step then? What is your next big move? What are you thinking about doing?
Yeah.
Other than the black collection, you know,
so the black collection I'm really excited about just because I want to wear pieces. But we show at the bridal market every year here in Chicago. There's a huge industry bridal market that happens twice a year. So our next market is in March. So that's very exciting. We had our first market open after the pandemic in August. And it was really exciting just to see all the buyers coming and to see the industry opening up again. So we'll be back at market in March showing new pieces. And we're just going to continue to grow our collection and have a lot more pieces to offer. We have some really great robes and wraps and just a lot of different fun things.
So are you going to be able to feature that collection at the March market?
Yes. So we'll have a lot of new pieces in March and we'll kind of move forward. And then in August, again, we'll be showing a full new line of dresses.
How exciting.
Yeah.
So where do you get any new inspiration for designing dresses? You know, do you look at trends out there or where do you dig for that?
Sure. So it's a little bit of both. Always looking at new contemporary trends and just have the opportunity to work with so many girls and kind of see what they're looking for and what they're trying to highlight. And then I kind of take all those modern ideas and then gain and kind of grab inspiration from taking apart old pieces. And I always lean towards the 1930s. I just love the the patterning and the way that pieces were made in that era. So a lot of times just getting in new vintage pieces are completely inspiring, because then we can kind of take a look and just even kind of bring details from these dresses into our new dresses. And just I watch a lot of old movies and just get great inspiration from old movies. And, you know, just, I mean, there's so much to look, you know, just through travels and, you know, you can find inspiration everywhere, I feel.
It's true.
So, and your, the one location is in Wicker Park. You ever think of expanding to like a second location, or you're happy in the one location?
You know, we do. We did a pop-up. We were in the 900 building on Michigan a couple years back, which was really great. Yeah, I think we're always open to new things. So there might be another store in the works.
Even outside of Chicago, maybe? Like in New York?
Potentially. Ah. Yeah. We always wanted to open a store in Los Angeles. So that may be something in the future that we would do.
That's exciting.
Looking forward to those types of things. Well, we have about a minute left here, so why don't you tell us how people can find you, website, Instagram, and whatever places in your location?
Sure. So we're in Wicker Park. We're 1721 North Avenue. Our website is silvermoonchicago.com, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, Silver Moon Chicago.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, Liz. That's Liz Meyer. She's been dressing and designing, well, as you heard, the rock and roll elite, but also has brought her experience to like a unique vintage and wedding gowns designed, and something that I think is affordable in all categories. You can, and that's at silvermoonchicago.com, and also on Instagram at silvermoonchicago. Liz Meyer, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air. She's dedicated her career to the advancement of nonprofits with community-based organizations for more than 25 years. Before her current position, she served as Director of Development for the Hospice of the Calumet Area for the past 8 years. She's worked in development and marketing, a whole wide range of things. So she was educated in Indiana, and now she's taken up a new position as Executive Director for the Miller Beach Arts. Please welcome to Art on the Air, Jennifer Akamura. Welcome, Jennifer.
Aloha, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, we like to start off kind of like you tell us your life story, so to speak.
My life story.
Yeah, like how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I was born and raised in Northwest Indiana. My family set roots in Gary. My father's side of the family came from Joliet, and my grandfather moved here to work in the steel mills, and my father did as well. And then my mother's side of the family had been here for a few generations, but they're Gary natives. And my dad's side lived in Gary as well. You know, just strong European stock, that hard workers that instilled a very strong work ethic in myself. My grandfather really cared about other people and had a very strong heart, and as well as my aunt Char, who I think were the two people responsible for developing my passion for helping others and working in the nonprofit arena.
Right. And all that community spirit, it really explains your whole career, actually.
Yes. Yes. And you know, we had family in Gary and then also in Hobart, Indiana. And so I was educated. I went to Hobart High School. I did go to St. Mary of the Lake here in Miller for a little while. And then for college, I went to St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer. I played soccer there. I was on the soccer team. And from there, I went to Ball State University and got a master's in public communication. Did it in a year, and to this day, I still regret that. It was too much in a short period of time, but I was eager to get going and working, and now as a working adult, how I should have valued that time in school a little longer, but I did it, And from Ball State, I went to Chicago and lived in Chicago for 12 years. And that's where I started my career. I worked for a number of different nonprofits. I started out actually as a youth worker. I worked in a a home for children who are wards of the state, and they were all, you know, had abuse or neglect in their background. And I taught social skills. I taught the kids things that we learn, you know, from our parents or from being in a nurturing environment that they didn't get. And as simple as how to answer the telephone, how to deal with your anger, you know, how to properly ask for help, household chores. I also helped them. They received funding each month from the state from being a ward, and I helped them develop budgets and lists of like your daily needs. And we would go shopping and we would go with the budget and we'd have their list of the things that they needed. And I would help them work through what they could get or not get, or the quantities, and just kind of guide them, you know, to grow as a healthy person. From there,
How young of a child did you work with?
The youngest was nine years old.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. So that was very, you know, that was a very eye-opening, you know, as one of my first professional positions to see the world through a different lens, and to just realize that not everybody has, you know, a sound family life or a good school, you know, to attend to help you become the person that you were meant to be. I did a lot of tracking their behaviors and did a lot of reporting for our supervisor, which was attractive to some of the other administration. And I kind of got geared towards doing more programming, developing more youth programming and community programming, and fell into the whole, oh, Jen, you're really good at tracking this data. You would be a good grant writer. And so I was introduced to the world of grant writing and volunteer coordination. And that's where my development career kind of took hold. And I went into that direction. And I really loved it. I loved that information gathering aspect of grant writing and how to present things properly or compelling. And then working with the other staff members to put together our story as why funders should support us. I was at Association House for a number of years, which was and still is today, it was one of the original settlement houses in Chicago. And their original community that they helped were Russians, Germans, Polish. And that was in that Wicker Park area of Chicago. And as the demographics changed, the programs remained the same. They just worked with a different population. So they went from a lot of Eastern Europeans coming in, English as a second language, job training, after school programming. They had a summer camp to get the kids out of the city. And that programming stayed the same, maybe with some tweaks, but they started to serve more of a Latin and African-American community. From there, I went to Erickson Institute. I worked there for a number of years in their development office and fundraising and doing events for early childhood education. Mm-hmm. And found myself back at Association House. We had a Harriet Sadowskis was our president. And we had, there were some of us that we were called Harriet's children, where she never quite let go of us. Even if we went to go work somewhere else, she was always very encouraging and wanted you to go out and get the experience, but you still stayed tied to the house. And I served as a volunteer, and then they had a director position open up and I was invited to come back. And that was pretty much my home base. So I took it as an opportunity to work there. and to go back and to serve in a leadership capacity. So, you know, fast forward several years, I'm an only child. My dad, unfortunately, had mesothelioma. My grandparents were aging, and I was doing a lot of commuting back and forth, to help take care of my grandparents and my father. And it got a little bit crazy. And so that's when I started to look for a position in Northwest Indiana. My grandmother and my father both received care from Hospice of the Calumet area. And, that's when my, you know, I kind of was like, you know, this is a really solid organization with a solid mission. If they ever needed anything, you know, needed somebody with my skill sets, this would be a really fine place to work. And about 3 months after my grandmother passed, I was networking in the area looking for jobs, and somebody sent me the position description for Director of Development for Hospice. And I was like, wow, you know, it was my gala season. I was crazy busy, and I didn't, you know, I had to update the resume and came up with a million excuses that I didn't have time to do it. And then one day I just sat down and said, let's just get it done, Jen. And then I won the position. So for the past 8 years, I have worked for the hospice mission, and with absolutely wonderful volunteers. Some of them I met while my family was in care. So it was really interesting to go that full circle and start to work alongside them. Adrian May, the CEO there, is a wonderful leader and fabulous at what she does. And I was very fortunate to be able to work alongside her. And then this opportunity came along and to work for the Miller Beach Arts and Creative District. It is my community. And, you know, Miller Beach Arts and Creative District is also a community development corporation. So they not only foster the arts, but also the development of local businesses and that whole Lake Street corridor. As we're starting to see some new changes, we'll be getting a new train station. And the opportunity to be able to work in my community, the commute's great, but I really had to sit and think. And it just kind of came to the point where it was the logical next step in my career. I joined the Friends of Hospice on my last day. I paid my dues, you know, I was no longer an employee, and joined their volunteer corps as well. And I'm still very connected with many of the people that work and volunteer there. They'll always have a piece of me.
The Miller Beach area is so art saturated, and all of your experience, I mean, it's like your experience is so perfect to hold this particular position, because if you can make, I mean, just the whole hospice thing, you know, because I've also had many experiences in hospices, and some of them I will never forget. They were such a beautiful experience for the whole family. But then there's the flip side of it as well. And so,
it's hard work.
It is My best friend was a hospice nurse when I was my best friend's mother was a hospice nurse when I was in high school. So I've been familiar with it for a long time, and having actual experience, so you bring to this job, I think, just a level of compassion as well that will be beautiful for the area.
Thank you.
Jennifer, I see that you're a graduate of Leadership Northwest Indiana, class number 40. I'm class out 6, by the way, back in the 90s.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
So tell us about that experience and how that worked. A lot of people may not be familiar with it. Now Purdue is overseeing the program, but I was actually on their board of directors for a long time. But yeah, tell us how that helped you out.
Oh, Leadership Northwest Indiana, LNI, was instrumental in helping me to build my network and to understand the landscape for working in Northwest Indiana. My entire career was in Chicago, and, you know, coming back as an adult and having my first, you know, professional position in Northwest Indiana, I had a lot to learn, because, you know, I hadn't really lived here full time since I was 18. And what I saw and what I did when I was 18 and what I'm focused on now are extremely different. And Elle and I was fabulous in terms of helping you to learn your what business resources, professional resources, volunteering. I loved how they took us, you know, to different counties and introduced different organizations, and it gave you a really good opportunity to meet other professionals who are also community leaders. I mean, there's a difference. There's a difference between somebody who just wants to work hard and make money and someone who wants to work hard, earn a living, and make a difference to the individuals that live in their community. I learned so much from so many people there. And I encourage whoever, you know, is, would have even a little bit of an interest in doing the program to definitely take part in that.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Yeah, it broadens your horizons about Northwest Indiana. You know, I lived in Highland and worked in Munster for most of my life, and you get kind of a narrow perspective of what you do, your little fiefdom, and it really broadens you to see Northwest Indiana as a whole and all the things that are part of that. So it was a great experience. The big thing it did for me is in my class was Jim Walsh, who was the development director for then WYN, now Lakeshore Public Media. And within months, I was on air pledging on television. And in fact, later on today, I'm going to be pledging at the radio station. So It made a lifelong connection. I'm also board chair for Lakeshore Public Media. So it makes a connection. And I agree with you about leadership Northwest Indiana. But let's get back to your current position as executive director. So
yes, you've been involved. You've been involved with the Miller Beach arts community for quite a long time. So you're not going into this particular position without any experience. And so as you've been so involved with it, the farmers market and all that other stuff, do you have a list of things that I know that you're just right now catching up and making sure that everything that's already in place still continues to move? But what are were there some hopes and wishes all these years that you were kind of kept tucked away that you will be able to implement? And can you share any of those ideas?
Oh, well, I do have a theater arts background, but I also have a, you know, that was kind of married with social work. So one of the things that I personally would like to see develop more with the Arts District is a youth development platform, an area where we can build out internships and just different volunteer opportunities for community youth, you know, whether that be when we're installing a show to work with our gallery curator, Gary Henderson. He has such a breadth of experience in the arts and working in galleries. And I have this vision of seeing young people learning how to hang art, or how do you decide what goes up when you're editing a show, and being able to talk to the artists and to understand their vision and how they created these pieces. But more importantly, to learn that there's a career in this. You know, you can be, they may not even realize that there's something that they can do. And maybe they like to doodle or draw, or they have, you know, something that they do for fun, but to know that that can evolve. And then I'd also like to, you know, we're building out more, we're calling it our Miller Movement. I am a yoga instructor as well. And so we're building out more of mindfulness and practices around the yoga philosophy. We have Angie Reens from the community who teaches Pilates on Tuesday evenings. And then we also have Danny Hart, who's also an educator at Ivy Tech. She runs their honors program. And she happened to be in my yoga instructor training and lives in Miller. So it was a perfect, you know, segue for Danny to come and develop a family yoga class, which is on Wednesday evenings. And to get her, you know, to get her working more in her community as well. You know, we just, there's 6,000 square feet of space there to do, you know, whatever the imagination can come up with, all within a schedule, of course. But that's where I'm at right now, is just learning, you know, figuring out where we need to tighten up systems and have that communication a little bit more rounded for the board and for the volunteers, and so we can be a little more fluid in our programming.
Well, speaking of your programming, tell us about some of the things you have going on in general. You talked about yoga. I think you currently have an exhibit going on that goes through January 2nd, what's in that? But tell us a little about that and what other events are going on here and then maybe into the new year in 2022.
Sure. Well, we do have a community show that is opening, that opened on December 3rd, and that runs through January 2nd. This is just a show where we just did a call out to the community, you know, community artists that don't normally have the opportunity to show their work. And we have a handful, maybe a dozen artists that are part of the show. And there's a lot of different pieces. There's some sculpture, there's some painting, there's some photography. There's some really, I don't even know what the medium I should call it, but it looks like a glass sculpture, but it was actually made out of plastic. Beautiful pieces, and a lot of enthusiasm is going into this show. People are very excited to come out, and even people, I even saw a post the other day saying, I'm looking for some art for my Airbnb. Where do you suggest we go? And it was like community art show. That will run, like I said, through December 2nd, and that's at the Marshall J. Gardner Center, our gallery location. And then we're bringing back more regular programming as we're freeing up and people are vaccinated. And during the pandemic that we've slowed a lot down, but now we're trying to bring things back little by little. So we've started to bring back the movie night. And that'll be the third Thursday of every month. And you can look for what movies will be featuring on our Facebook page or our website, and which is millerbeacharts.org. And our Facebook page is Miller Beach Arts. And then we also are starting a brand new trivia night, which will be the fourth Thursday of every month. And that will be run, that is going to be designed and run by one of our community residents, Josh Gamble. And he's a bit of a comedian, a jack of all trades, witty, smart, you know, great all around neighbor. And we're hoping that, you know, people will come out and see what Josh can do. And then we'll have exhibits, you know, art exhibits throughout the year. We're also in the works developing a theater program. And we have two community members that have brought a plan to start a cabaret night, which will be in the summer. So that's still evolving, but it's something to put on your radar.
If someone's interested in exhibiting, do they contact you, or do you have someone else that vets the artwork or potential?
They can contact me. They can go through our website, which or our general email, which is mbacdarts@gmail.com, or call 219-885-9114. And I will certainly make sure that we direct you to our exhibits committee. We do have an exhibits committee that meets on a regular basis. They go out and see what artists are interested in coming and exhibiting at the gallery. And then they work out a schedule. So they just finished their 2022 schedule and are already working on 2023. So so if you don't get in just in this year, we'll make sure that, you know, we'll learn more about you and get you on the schedule. So
real quick, we have about a minute left. You still doing the Speaking of Charity on WJLB?
Speaking of Charity did go on a brief pause, as we all went on our sacred pause for the pandemic. My partner in crime there, Gloria Morris, who I've known since I was 12, she also has a full-time gig with Google and also runs Float 60, which is a sensory deprivation health spa in Northwest Indiana. So she's been kind of running, burning the candle on both ends, but we do definitely hope to get back in the studio. It was a great opportunity for local nonprofits to come in and showcase what they do for our region and how people can get involved. So we interviewed over 30 nonprofits, and we very much intend to do more.
Well, real quick, give us your website, Facebook page, address, and phone number, contact information while we wrap it up here, Jen.
Okay. Our website is millerbeacharts.org. Our email is mbacdarts@gmail.com. Phone number is 219-885-9114. And we are housed out of the Marshall J. Gardner Center for the Arts at 540 South Lake Street in Gary.
Well, thank you so much. That's Jennifer Akamora, the new executive director for Miller Beach Arts. And we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing about your new position there and your vision for it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Wishing you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you. And I hope to see you there soon.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president of radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.